Welcome to a 20-episode miniseries at the Texas Robotics Summit, hosted by our friends at Granite Defense. We dive into the evolving world of drones and robotics in public safety aviation through 20 fantastic conversations with leaders across public safety from the fire service, law enforcement, EMS operations, wildlife management, and more. We explore the challenges, advancements, and the critical role of technology in enhancing emergency services operations. A special thanks to the sponsor of the Smart Firefighting Podcast, WS Darling Company, for making this podcast possible. Enjoy the show. We are here live at the ranch alongside Captain Michael Leo and Lieutenant Fred Carlson from FDNY. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Keeping busy. A lot to see, a lot of people to catch up with, and a lot of industry to talk about.
So what brings you guys to the middle of nowhere, Texas, to hang out and talk about robots?
Yeah, so this is a great opportunity for us to come out and kind of see what everyone's doing in the industry, any new trends. And also gives us the ability to test our own capabilities out. We have some time here where we're actually running a station where we're doing rest tube drops and payload deliveries, as well as messenger line capabilities. So this is a great opportunity to do this outside of New York City where we really can.
You said the words payload drop and rest tube droppable. In layman's terms, what is that? Why is FDNY dropping a rest tube from a drone?
So we've been working at the beach. Mayor Adams from New York City basically asked us if we could do shark patrol. And, you know, after doing a risk assessment at the Rockaways last year, we looked at what we really needed to do. So although we are looking for sharks that have come close to people, we're also looking for swimmers in distress. We're looking at the rip currents that we can easily identify from the air. And it's been working out really well. So one of the things we saw at the end of the season is if we can do our patrols with these rest tubes attached, which we were doing at the end of the year, and we see a swimmer in distress, we don't have to deploy a drone and hook it up. It's already hooked up. We're already in the air. We swoop down, drop the device, and then that person has a some type of life-saving device to keep them afloat until we have the rest of the rescuers go get them.
So then what happens when you spot a shark? Do you airlift Fred in there and he bear wrestles them, or what?
Absolutely. we've been working all off season for a notification system through the New York City Parks and the mayor's office. And so we have this whole protocol that we follow once we see a shark that's close to swimmers. I mean, we've seen, what did we see this year?
I've lost track. It wasn't just sharks. We had a lot of smaller fish. We had some whales, a lot of life, wildlife,
turtles.
Yeah, dolphins, you name it. There's a lot of stuff in the water out there, and you know, it's not like they live there or anything, but it's good to have that awareness. And we are looking at other options of shark deterrent equipment. They have electrified lines that you can drop in that'll, you know, deter the sharks. So we're just trying to see what else is out there in the industry that we can leverage into public safety to make the water safer for the citizens of New York.
So I think when people hear FDNY, they think of just a pretty large fire scale operation. And there's not only the scope of firefighters, but also just the density and the population of the city. I'd love to hear some context. What are some of the operational challenges that FDNY faces when trying to provide life-saving and just kind of general day-to-day fire service operations for the city of New York?
New York City Fire Department is tremendous. And it's a daunting scope for what we do, for the fact that we're one robotic and drone unit for the whole city. We operate with an officer, a pilot, a visual observer, and a data specialist, a couple hundred miles of shoreline, you know, a couple hundred square miles of land to cover, and you know, thousands of runs every day. We average about 1,000 call outs a year with our unit. And when we're not flying at incidents, we're training. So it's something that we as a group are staying on top of. But for what the FDNY as a whole tackles day in and day out is really insurmountable.
I'd love to kind of expand on that a little bit. What makes New York unique in terms of some of the challenges? I mean, when thinking about, granted, I hate thinking about how each fire department's a little different because there are so many commonalities, but what are some of the unique New York challenges and unique kind of dynamics to New York that maybe people aren't aware of?
From a drone standpoint or from a fire department standpoint?
I think both.
Well, as far as a drone standpoint, our airspace is incredibly complicated. We have LaGuardia, JFK, and Newark with all Class B airspace that overlap the city. Several heliports up and down the Hudson River and the East River. We have seaplanes taking off out of the East River out in Jamaica Bay. Heliflights coming in. It's really some congested airspace. And it was a long road of getting buy-in from federal partners and local, you know, city agencies and everybody to be on board to let us be able to fly and be able to provide the, you know, situational awareness that our members need while operating at large scale events. So as a drone unit, we do respond on second alarms or greater, large brush fires, any kind of high angle rescue, confined space, and we can self-assign. If we hear something coming in that we feel like we can help, we have the ability to call the dispatcher and respond as a unit to go assist. We've also been asked to help with other city agencies that don't have drone programs. So that's how this whole life safety mission began down in the Rockaway Peninsula, is the Parks Department was given drones by the governor and said, hey, you know, we don't know what to do with this. We don't know how to train. We don't have a program. We don't have administration that can handle this concept. So it's become a bit of a task for us to develop ways to help other city agencies get into the drone space, which has been really, really a lot of fun and interesting, because it's nice to get fresh eyes, people that never thought they'd be using drones, to get it in their hands and to have them come to the realization of how they can leverage the technology has been really, really beneficial.
Michael, how else would you maybe add to that from a drone perspective or kind of the uniqueness of New York's fire service operations?
Well, we're very unique in that we're very vertical, right? So, and that also presents some issues, you know, such as the urban canopy where we have lots of RF issues, lots of GPS issues, the winds that go through these buildings, you know, like it's a huge grid. And every time the wind shifts just like half a degree, it's a whole new wind pattern, and then the Venturi effects of the wind whipping through the buildings. So the drone pilots really have to be on their toes. And the same goes through with firefighting. I mean, working in such a vertical area, I mean, it's like, you know, the firefighters every day, you know, they're going up a couple of floors at least every, you know, most of the days we have fires. And it's just, that's taxing, you know, the verticalness of it. And there's not many cities that are, you know, like Chicago is a good example of someone who's close to what we have. It's just a massive amount of old, dense buildings that create a whole bunch of different problems. And magnetic interference is another huge problem that we encounter every day with the drones. So we're progressing at a great rate where we can be of great service to the incident commander, making moves, validating their moves after they make them. And things are going really well. And we're looking to the future, to the things that we're going to do as far as integrating new systems and connecting with, you know, more smart firefighting.
Well said. I didn't even ask for that plug.
There you go. Served it up.
So, I mean, really, really thank you for all that information and context about New York. And both of you have said the word drones in different ways, but I think also the summit is called the Texas Robotics Summit. I mean, I know New York is not just using aerial drones, but some aspects of land drones, water drones in different ways, or robots. Tell me more about some of the kind of like the suite of robots that FDNY is using within the robotics team.
So we've been using unmanned ground systems for a long time. So what happened was they got embedded into other units who really didn't know how to use the technology. And so, of course, they were turning these devices on without putting the antennas on, frying the radio boards, all the rookie mistakes that you'd make if you didn't really know a lot about robotics. So that kind of helped create our program where we said we were going to take a bunch of people who are tech savvy and knew what they were doing and make it a dedicated unit, which really is what we needed. So a lot of those old robots we ended up getting rid of. And right now we operate with two Boston Dynamic spot robots, and they've been very good and useful for what we do. They, you know, they represent more of a hazmat application, but already we've shown that we've used them in a collapse situation. So, you know, we're looking for different ways we use them. We also use them a lot in STEM education where, you know, when we look at the worth of what we're doing and how, you know, we're spending taxpayer dollars, right, to do all this stuff. So how can we use these things at all the time using them and creating worth in the program? So we do a lot of STEM education. We actually opened up our own robotics club inside of a high school in New York City, the FDNY High School, and that's been a great endeavor as well. So those two robots basically work together at events. You know, we use the one maybe to use as a communications, you know, node hopping and creating the mesh that we need to penetrate inside of a building. And then we have other robots. And I'll let Fred talk about, you know, we have a couple of ROVs, all surface, but I'll let Fred take that.
Sure. So we also have an Emily, which is side-scanning sonar that's remotely operated for finding things in the water. So if you have recovery effort that you know, might be too rough of a current that you don't want to get, you know, our divers into, or if it's against the rocks, I'd rather risk the use of an ROV, you know, boat with side scanning sonar than putting somebody's life into a bad situation. And we're also looking at using the Dolphin propelled life rafts that go out, and you can use them to grab people that are stuck in rip currents as well. So we're always looking for new ways to leverage technology into what we do, because there's so much out there that can be brought into the public safety wheelhouse that it's just another tool in the sheath.
I mean, I've heard you both say in different ways of how you can use a robot to prevent putting a first responder's life at risk, which seems to be a kind of a no-brainer application of why drones make sense. What are some other examples of like how robots provide value to the fire department or are a force multiplier or save time and money in different ways?
So the robots are there to leverage data, right? I mean, that's really when it comes down to it, that's what we're doing. We're correlating data, whether it be, you know, photogrammetry or infrared imagery or just regular optical images, and we're getting that to the people that are making the decisions. One of my favorite events that we had a junkyard fire, and we got the drone up. They had been there. It was out in Staten Island. We respond out of Roosevelt Island. For anybody that doesn't know New York City, on a Friday afternoon, that's about a two-hour car ride. But we got there in relatively good time, but they were having a really hard time with this fire. It was burning for quite a while. And we got the drone up, and we were able to see that the seat of the fire was actually the row behind the cars that had the smoke coming out of it and about three cars down. So we redirected. Well, we spoke to the chief and said, hey, you might want to redirect some of these streams over to this area. It seems to be hotter. And started improving quickly. And for those that don't understand New York City Fire Department, when a call comes in, the three firehouses that are closest to that incident get assigned to it. So we don't have anybody else coming to help us. We backfill our own companies. So the more resources that are at an event, there's more resources that aren't available for other neighborhoods. So to get those resources, you know, back into service and back to covering their area is better for the citizens of the city. So the fact that we could get there and say, hey, this might get better if you move the streams over here. And it was almost a night and day difference. The color of the smoke started changing. The intensity and the veracity of which it was coming out of these piled up cars was improving. And we got, you know, resources back into service quicker. So that type of an event was something that really got a lot of buy-in early on in our expeditions of going out to help. So it's been little victories like that that have gotten more buy-in. So using the robotic dog at the collapse in Manhattan, you know, we were still searching for somebody that was in the building, and we were able to locate that without having to put somebody in harm's way. And that's the type of the win that we're looking for. We're going to leverage that equipment where, you know, we don't want to risk somebody getting hurt. I don't want to have to buy another t-shirt for somebody that, you know, dies line of duty. If I have to buy another robot dog, I'll buy another robot dog. It's a much better investment.
Anything you want to add on that, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I think what, you know, Fred was starting to dive into was the safety aspect of things as well. You know, when we're operating in these buildings and if we were able to put the water on target faster, it definitely gets us out of there faster. It's less water in the building, less of a collapse potential. And certainly there's a huge safety end of all this where we can see firefighters on the roof. We've watched firefighters bail off of the roof, and we're able to tell the chief that they're actually safe, you know, and then they don't have to go through a whole Mayday protocol, you know, start putting other resources at that Mayday. And so, you know, that's another end of drones that, you know, is really big.
So we're here, and you just gave some great context about drones and robots within the context of FDNY. Maybe not just a robotic standpoint. You mentioned earlier leveraging technology to help FDNY be more effective, do their job more safely and efficiently. What else is FDNY thinking about or tracking in regards to some technology adoption or some change management within the next, you know, 6 months to 6 years?
Well, we move at the pace at which all big government moves. So
fast,
really fast. So 6 months, I don't know about. I don't know if I can give you anything 12, on 6 months.
One to 5 years.
So we're such a big entity. I'll be honest with you. There's a lot that, you know, we basically are program administrators for the robotics program. And there's a lot that the FDNY does that we might not even be privy to on some of the technologies that come up. So, I mean, there's things that we're working on, and we constantly, like, RF technologies with communications, we're constantly in touch with them, and they're constantly changing our communication systems and making it better, making fail-safe systems, backing it up. But as far as new technologies, I don't see anything really on the forefront that's...
There are things that I would like to see brought into that I see federal partners use, such as like ATAC, just better equipment tracking and having that bigger situational awareness picture of, you know, who's where and doing what. But that's way above me. I mean, we have a research and development department that this is all they do. And every once in a while, our lives cross paths and we get to discuss things and how to integrate it. So I know even our Spiro Safety is always looking to find ways to leverage that technology. And we're almost like a testing bed for them. If they see something that they want to try, they'll call us and, you know, we'll bounce off of each other with a soundboard. I mean, with 11,000 people in our department, it's very hard to say where that department's going. That's, you know, that's way above us, but anything we can do to help make decisions along the way is what we're here for.
Yeah. And I would be remiss not to ask it as, because you just brought it up, but the word ATAC, I've heard the word TAC being used more and more within the realm of public safety. In your words, and, you know, both Mike and Fred, what is TAC and how is it something that could help different small, medium, large departments better take the drone data and use it for good?
So that's part of the reason that I personally wanted to come down to this event is the state of Texas and the state of Colorado have stood up servers. So TAC stands for Tactical Awareness Kit, which is basically a computer program that can accept data from smart devices, cell phones, iPads, ADS-B, so broadcasting technology out of planes, helicopters, and it brings all of it into an interface that you can share. So it's basically like an operational standpoint that you can sit back and look at what's going on. So we currently leverage DroneSense for our flight data so that we can see our other pilots while we're flying, and our video links are all streamed online to, we call it the IC app, the Incident Command app. So the FDNY technology department built its own in-house application that every chief, every fire apparatus all has access to this massive amount of data that's into this application, whether it's Esri layers for where subway stations are, or Con Ed stations for power or water mains, how big is that fire hydrant for the super pumper? Like, all that data is correlated into this app. And through DroneSense and an API, we are able to push our data into that. So the chiefs that are responding from far away, if we're there first, can click on a link and they'll be able to see what our drones are providing at that incident. So to leverage TAC, it's something that we would need from higher up on the food chain. The FDNY to stand up its own server might be a little bit of a heavy lift, but it's something that if we can prove the worth of it from states like Texas and Colorado, the FBI, there's several other larger federal government agencies that use it, and the DOD, that it's shareable data. It's using those back-end API switches to pull information and be able to see who's where. So, you know, if the NYPD is flying a helicopter over our incident, I'll be able to see it, you know, in real time as it's happening. So it's just that shareable, tangible data that can help make decisions better and quicker and more efficient is what I'm really looking forward to.
Any hot take on TAC, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I could see how TAC would really, the problem with us is like TAC would work out really well for us as in robotics, as a full for the New York City Fire Department and all department resources. There's some trouble with it in that we're a very vertical city. So, you know, I see a lot of the advantages that it would bring us, but I also see some, you know, some of the things that is going to hinder it. I mean, if we have 400 personnel on one scene at a, you know, we don't need the Blue Force tracking. We know where they are. It's the Z-axis that we need. And I know a lot of people are working on it. So it's something that I think will come in the future. But and when it does, it's going to become very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Within the context of FDNY, we talked about robots. We've talked about, you mentioned tracking, you know, different aspects of you know, common operating picture. What would be your message to some of the kind of early stage startup companies as well as established companies when they're thinking about, hey, like I want to try and work with FDNY and I would love the opportunity to try and collaborate with FDNY in some context. And of course, FDNY has evolving challenges like everyone. What would you say to problem solvers out there and companies and entrepreneurs that are interested in trying to collaborate with FDNY?
Well, I mean, we're certainly open to it. We've done a lot of it over the years. We also do a lot of it through other agencies like Drone Responders, where you know, we're able to help on a broader scale. And it's tough, like sometimes we get a lot of requests, like a lot to do certain things. And we try to meet them all, but we can't always. And then, you know, people have to remember we're an anomaly where our city is just so big and different from a lot of other places. But there's a lot of lessons that we've done over the, and you know, our lessons, you know, come from failure and they come from success. So, and we openly share all that. And I think that's important because, you know, it's been a long road. I mean, this 2024 is actually 10 full years now that we have started research and development to, you know, where we are now. 2017 being the first time we actually flew a drone at a incident. You know, we've had a lot of, and it's big city stuff. So, you know, we have a lot of political things and then, you know, money, it's on everybody's mind. And, you know, you have to have leadership that supports you, which I have to say, you know, our leadership is outstanding from, you know, all the way up. And they really got behind us, and it enabled us to start a very successful program that's 365, 24/7, and dedicated to just doing this.
That's awesome. And I mean, Fred, if you want to add on to that, I mean, even the, what would be your message to companies that are, you know, even in other industries that are maybe thinking about trying to bring their technology into public safety, maybe at whole or obviously with an FDY context?
It's definitely a difficult task for the fact that, you know, Mike preaches it all the time, organizational structure. It's not something that we're just going to take a piece of equipment and just do it on our own. It needs approval from our chiefs and research and development. So for us, it's not a small undertaking to just say, hey, you made a new drone, we'll try it out. That's really not how we operate. I mean, I don't want it to end badly for anybody. So it's until it's something that we can really, truly trust. It's, you know, we're flying over 8 million people. I mean, not literally flying over the people. Mike O'Shea would get very mad at me for saying that. But with the dense population in our operations, it's not something that we're going to take somebody's, you know, equipment off the shelf and just try it. And it'll start, it's definitely a wall, you know, crawl, walk, run, right? So if we're going to get a piece of equipment that we're going to try out, we're going to try it on our proving grounds out in Queens on an open field and see how it handles. And then as it gets, you know, our members get more proficient and comfortable with it, we'll progress to, you know, more difficult environments. And it's not something that we're just going to, you know, throw into effect right away. So it takes some time for us. And that's another problem for a lot of these companies is what we do is going to take time. You know, we'll try your equipment, but we're going to try your equipment. We're going to have it. It's going to go through its paces. It might break. It might come back in multiple pieces. I don't know, but nobody wants to see somebody get hurt or something break and something get damaged. So it's definitely a risk versus reward thing for us to be able to adopt early technology.
Yeah, I always say too, like there's some companies that come up with some outstanding tech and unbelievable devices, and it could be the best device you've ever made, and it could save people 100% of the time and be very reliable. If it doesn't fit into our operations, and that's a whole nother component of how we research and develop what we're using, is it's got to fit in our operations. I mean, if it doesn't, it's never going to work. In other words, if we have to go back and get something, if it's too large to operate, too large to get on the scene, we're actually, you know, I always say we have to be very fast and mobile and agile, and that's what gets us to the scenes quicker. And, you know, with the drone industry, like, we have to constantly look ahead of where we're going to be. And that takes help from academia. It takes help from all government, all other government entities that help us. And so we're looking to the future where now we may not have to drive there anymore. Now we can fly there. And obviously everyone's looking towards that. It's very difficult in New York City because, you know, until we have some type of sense and avoid technology that's, you know, credible and reliable, you know, we're kind of just watching the technology right now. But sooner or later, that's what's going to happen, and it's going to make it's just going to change everything we do in our whole operation. So those are just some points that, you know, when it comes to working with other people, sometimes they have a great product, but it just doesn't fit into our operation.
Yeah. So granted, this podcast could go on for hours, and I realize there's another stuff going on and demos we want to get to, but kind of two final questions I want to get to for both of you. And this, the first one is kind of actually two parts, so I guess three questions. Within the context of your role of FDNY and frankly, just fire service at large, you know, what's something that, it's kind of twofold. What's something that keeps you up at night, but then what's also something that you're really excited about and you see there being real potential about, man, this is something that really could be a game changer within what you're doing within the public safety sector?
So everything keeps me up at night, to be honest with you, you know, so just a little family dynamic. My wife is a physician and she's on call a lot. So my phone goes off, her phone goes off. I go in on fourth alarms to kind of deconflict the airspace. And then, you know, she's getting up. So like this, we don't get a lot of sleep. However, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of responsibility in running a problem and being the person that, you know, if something goes wrong, like I'm getting that phone call, and, you know, anybody else who's in that position kind of understands that. But I will say that the team is and has been unbelievable. And I always say, like, a lot of people ask me, what's that aha moment in your, and I always say the same thing. Well, my aha moment is every time my pilot decides not to fly because they're making good aeronautical decisions. And to me, I champion that. That's something that, okay, you made a good decision. You didn't try to push it. And, you know, our fire department's been around since 1865. I think that they'll manage without a drone for another day if that's the case, if we can't fly. Certainly the drones make everything better. It's a great tool. But those are those are some of the things that I think about, you know, consistently.
I'll agree with that.
Retweet.
Yeah, I have to agree with Mike. And whenever he's out of town, I'm next up on deck for going in on Fourth Alarms. And that is something that it's very different between somebody like the wildfire community, where they have an ATAC and an air boss, and they're running that whole integration between manned aviation and everything else. For us in an urban environment, there's really no official title for it. We didn't want to steal a nomenclature that's already in use. So we don't call ourselves an air boss. That's not our job. So we go in as airspace coordinators, because we're going to be in touch with the local press helicopters and talk to the NYPD helicopter airbase. And we're going to deconflict that way through other means. But what was the second part of the question about technology that's upcoming? Yeah. What am I excited about? I'm really amazed at the amount of the electrical vehicle for the robots, the ground robots. There's a lot of track bots and things that can move cars. And with the influx of EV fires that we've been seeing with lithium ion batteries, just equipment that can handle, you know, those nasty, dark underground fires without, you know, anybody losing their lives would be a big win for me. So there's a lot of equipment here that we're looking at, a lot of stuff from the DOD industry that is making its way into public safety. And that's a lot of the stuff that I've been personally trying to keep my eyes on, because it is becoming an issue within the city, the amount of fatalities we've had from lithium ion fires.
Mike, what about you and the excitement part?
Well, there's things that I'm looking forward to that I know will probably happen over time. One of the things that just has to do with pure firefighting is, so like we have smoke detectors in hallways in these high-rise buildings. This is where more of the smart thing comes in, right? So wouldn't it be great if they can make these detectors like, you know, multi-detectors, where now we might have thermal, we might have LIDAR, we might have temperature sensors, and then we could see what's going on that floor. So now we pull up and we know that, you know, there's more smoke on the 67th floor. We need to send, that's where we got to send units. And sometimes, you know, strange things happen with the people opening doors when they shouldn't be. So there's sometimes we have a couple of floors that are far away from each other that are filled with smoke, and we need to get resources there as quick as possible. So I look forward to things like that, you know, the technology that's going to get to the firefighters very quickly. And when they pull up, they kind of know exactly where to go to and target where they need to be.
And now final questions for both of you, but it could also be a statement, any sort of, call it a mic drop, but a question, a comment, a quote, or a challenge that you live by, or something that you could leave us with here today.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It also doesn't even be fire service, really. It could be about New York sports, you know, Yankees, Mets, Giants, Jets.
I'm not a big quote. He's a big quote guy. He should have something. So we send out this newsletter every week. Now we do it monthly. It was just getting to be a lot. And this is a great point for anybody starting a program or has a program. So this newsletter that Fred puts out is he puts a quote in it every week. That's why this came up on this question. And so I figured he'd have something to say.
I've done so many.
But this newsletter he puts out is unbelievable, because it says everything that we've done in the last month, what we're doing, where we're going, how we're doing it. It's a way that we, as the program administrators, can talk to the unit, that's the operational unit, so they understand. So it goes down the chain, then it goes up the chain. And now all of our bosses, all the way up, know what we're doing, what we've done. They can see the worth of the unit, and it's an outstanding tool.
Is it a public newsletter?
It's not public. You know, we just put it out internally, but I mean, if somebody wanted to look at it, we have plenty to share, and we'd certainly give that out.
Well, I did. So part of why we're here, right? NIST is a big part of this, and it's something that we bring into our training, and it's let no man's ghost return to say my training let me down. And training is steadfast. That is what the fire service is. You want your operations to be second nature. You don't want to have to think about what you're doing. And that's the beauty of our program, is that our pilots are dedicated to just this. When something goes wrong, they're not thinking about how do I take care of this. They're thinking about what can I do to make it better. And that all just falls back on training and the willingness from our chiefs to let us be what we are. And that's just something that our program really strives for, is to be trained up and efficient and available and to be able to get the job done.
Man, if that's not a mic drop, I don't know what is. And I just, like you said earlier, you're either flying and you're out there or you're training. So I appreciate your no days off mentality to continue to become the best versions of yourself to provide the best possible service to the citizens of New York. Any final thoughts?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. You're doing some really good stuff. I admire the work that you're doing, and I look forward to staying in touch and collaborating in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Till next time. Thanks for tuning in to this mini-series created at the Texas Robotics Summit, hosted by Granite Defense. Make sure to put this amazing event on your calendar for 2025. For this podcast episode, what do you like? What do you think? Drop us a comment on social media and let us know your favorite quote. Thanks for all that you do, and have a great day ahead.